My guests are a mother and daughter who have written a new memoir comparing their experiences of the civil rights movement. Patricia Stevens Due grew up in segregated Florida. In 1960, when she was a student at Florida A&M University, she joined CORE, the Congress of Racial Equality, and participated in her first civil rights action. It was a sit-in at a segregated Woolworth's lunch counter. After she was arrested, she and four of the protesters refused to pay the fine, insisting on serving their sentences to clog up the jail and bring national attention to their cause. It was the first so-called jail-in. She was arrested in several subsequent protests and has remained an activist. She and her husband raised their children in integrated neighborhoods. In fact, they were the first African-American family in a couple of neighborhoods they moved to. Patricia's daughter, Tanana Reeve-Due, went to private, predominantly white schools until the fourth grade, when she enrolled in a predominantly African-American public school, where she had her first black teacher. Tanana Reeve-Due is a journalist and novelist. Her new book with her mother, Patricia Stevens Due, is called Freedom in the Family. Patricia Stevens Due, when you were in the civil rights movement in the 60s, one cop threw a tear gas canister right in your face. He recognized you as one of the leaders, one of the main activists in this protest. And that tear gas canister went off in your face. It affected your eyes permanently. You have to wear dark glasses indoors as well as outdoors a good deal of the time. So your children couldn't help but notice that you had this like permanent damage. What did you tell them about it? What moral did you want them to get out of it? That, you know, you can be permanently impaired by activism. I mean, what how did you want to tell them about this without it being too frightening? What moral did you want them to get?
Well, from the time they were very young, I was wearing these dark glasses indoors and outdoors, and there weren't many questions asked then, but they learned at a very early age that we had been foot soldiers, actually in a war heaped on us by our own country, and that there were many wounds, and I had one of the wounds that was visible. But they also knew that there were many wounds that you could not see. There were so many emotional wounds. As I think about that day when this tear gas was thrown in my face, there were many people there who were tear gas, and as I was led away by a man, because I could not see right after it happened, who led me to a church. He said he had been in the army. Don't rub your eyes. Put this handkerchief over your eyes. As I sat in that church, I could hear all of the screams of the other students. So what you had to say to your children is that what you did was important, and you had to do it because you had to make a difference. And in my case, I had to be free.
Patricia Stevens Due, you grew up in the segregated South. And Tanana Reeve-Due, you grew up in integrated neighborhoods. Patricia, I'd like to know if you intentionally wanted to bring up your children in integrated neighborhoods, whether that was a goal or whether that's the way it worked out.
No, actually, that was not a goal, although I think it's important for people to get to know each other. But they ended up in integrated neighborhoods because when my husband and I went house hunting, there weren't any housing available in black middle class neighborhoods because it was so difficult for blacks to get loans to buy homes that usually once they bought a home, they kept it forever. So because we could not find housing in black neighborhoods, we just started looking for housing in other neighborhoods. Now, just to back up a little bit, I was in Quincy, Florida when Tanana Reeve was three, and my husband and I left because we felt that she needed to be in school, and there were no schools available in Quincy at that time for black children. So we moved to Miami, and I tried to find a school for Tanana Reeve, and we had to take her with us from school to school. And one of the most painful things that ever happened to me was because of our hunt for a school for Tanana Reeve. School after school in Miami, Florida said, whites only. So after a few days of having heard this, Tanana Reeve felt that she had found a solution. She went home, she covered herself with baby powder, her entire body with baby powder so she could be white, so she could go to school, being 3 years old, not realizing that being white meant more than just using something white on your skin, because actually Tanana Reeve thought her grandmother was white because she was a fair-skinned person. So her solution was to cover herself with baby powder and she would be white.
And I told her, Mommy, can I go to school now? Because I thought, okay, this problem has been solved.
So Tanana Reeve, for your mother, this was very upsetting. What's your memory of that experience?
I absolutely remember covering myself with the baby powder, but I don't remember a feeling of hurt or rejection associated with going with her from school to school. So I think it's just that, you know, in a child's way, you come across a situation, and instead of thinking poorly of myself necessarily, you know, I didn't think I was inferior to anyone at that time, I'm pretty sure, but I just thought, okay, this is sort of an aesthetic problem. I can put the powder on and then, you know, everything will be fine.
If you're just joining us, my guests are Patricia Stevens Dew, who is a civil rights activist, a long-term civil rights activist since the early 1960s, and Tanana Reeve Dew, her daughter, who is a journalist and a novelist. They've written a mother-daughter memoir of the civil rights movement called Freedom in the Family. Tanana Reeve, your mother grew up in a segregated city. You grew up in integrated neighborhoods. What were some of the things you were up against in integrated neighborhoods? Like you've said, you were called an Oreo. What were some of the problems that you faced in integrated neighborhoods?
I really felt caught in the middle as a young person. It was profoundly painful for me to finally have the exposure on some level I had deeply craved with a lot of black children, only to discover that I was immediately outcast because of their perceptions of me, either by the way I dressed, the way I spoke, my attitude toward my schoolwork, I mean, all these things that I really had gotten from my parents because we were a very education-oriented home. Here I was with this strong sense of history and strong sense of having come from a civil rights family, and the very people, you know, in my mind that my parents had sacrificed for were rejecting me, and that was just on one side. On the other side, we lived in mostly white neighborhoods. Very often, we were the pioneering first black family in a lot of neighborhoods, and at one point, one of our neighbors threatened to my mother that if he saw us playing in his yard, he was going to shoot us with his shotgun. Now, my parents never told us this, but there were people from our church, which is a Unitarian church, there were white members of the church sitting outside in the car to patrol the house at night in case someone might try to do harm to us. And then we moved to another neighborhood, and then I became more aware of the problem because my parents had really tried to shield us in the previous neighborhood, but when we moved, it was obvious that people had been throwing tomatoes against the house, that people were throwing rocks against the house. Someone put rocks in my father's gas tank. And that's when I became intimately familiar with the N-word, because young children as young as 5 years old walking down the street would call me nigger. My first experience was one of the first days I was in the new neighborhood walking down the street feeling carefree, and a teenage boy came walking past and muttered just loudly enough for me to hear, "If there's one thing I can't stand," he said, "it's a four-eyed nigger." And I was just shocked. Because I knew, I mean, the word nigger to me had all sorts of connotations from a long time ago, from the civil rights era, from slavery, for, you know, night riders and burning crosses. And it really had not occurred to me that that would be the sentiment where we lived, but it actually became fairly commonplace for me that I was called nigger quite often, to the point where I realized after a couple of years, I was about 10 years old at that time. By the time I was 12 or 13, I noticed that I had a tendency to walk with my eyes facing the sidewalk. I didn't want to make eye contact. I didn't want to draw attention to myself because I learned to expect outbursts from every person I passed.
If you're just joining us, my guests are Patricia Stevens Dew, a longtime civil rights activist, and her daughter Tanana Reeve Dew, a journalist and novelist. Their new mother-daughter memoir about the fight for civil rights is called Freedom in the Family. Patricia Stevens Dew, when you were in prison back in 1960 after participating at a lunch counter sit-in to integrate the lunch counter, your father wrote you a letter, and I'm going to read an excerpt of it. He said, I know that you feel that you are doing a grand and noble thing. Remember this. If either of you get into trouble, meaning you or your sister, if either of you get into trouble, the very people you are trying to help would never lend you a hand. The facts are really this. About 10 or 15% of our race are just about ready for what you're trying to accomplish. The other 85 or 90% don't care and are not at all interested and would do nothing to aid the cause. Then your father warned that you could be expelled from school and that he could lose his job because he works for the county and the state. What impact did that letter have on you?
At the time, really probably none. My father had been my civics teacher. My father was the person who had taught me I had the responsibility to be involved and I had the right to be a first-class citizen. So as I found that letter a few years ago and reread it, it was really as if I was reading that letter for the first time. But hearing it read and having read it myself in recent years really bring tears to my eyes, because my parents, like the parents of the other persons who were involved, suffered so much. In another letter, he talked about how he was afraid my mother would have a nervous breakdown. But I wanted to be free, and the others in jail wanted to be free, and even our parents, our grandparents, and no one else could stop us. We were going to do what we thought had to be done in order to be free.
Did you assume that your children would get involved in the civil rights movement and would put their lives on the line the way you had? And did you want them to do that?
No. I did not assume that they would have to do that.
You thought it would be all over by the time they were growing up?
Well, I guess I was a little idealistic on several fronts. In 1954, with the Brown decision about school desegregation, on May 17th, I thought in September all the schools would be desegregated. All the children would be sharing the equipment and having the updated books and all. I was wrong. 2003, we still have some problems.
Tanana Reeve, did you expect to be a part of the civil rights movement? And was there a movement, an obvious movement, to be a part of when you became a college student?
Yes. Well, I went to Northwestern University in 1983, and I really felt as if I'd been a little civil rights activist in training. You know, there's that age when you're an adolescent, when you're just so full of fire, just ready to help change the world. So I went to the campus, and it turned out to be a fairly conservative campus. So the days of all the pictures I'd seen from Kent State and all of the civil rights demonstrations on college campuses during the 60s didn't quite match the picture of what I found when I went to college. But there was one incident that was very telling. The anti-apartheid movement was really the major movement on campuses during that time. And I found myself sort of really accidentally part of a student takeover. I had just been attending a rally and feeling stirred by speeches I'd grown up all my life, going to NAACP conventions, hearing these stirring speeches. And here were these speeches again, and I felt the fire, and we were all shouting, "Divest now, divest now." And all of a sudden, we were inside the administration building. But when we were warned that we would be arrested because the police were coming, I actually didn't stay. I thought I would stay. I believed I would stay. But somehow my college roommate called me and reminded me I had a dinner date that night. And I ended up slinking out, sort of with my tail between my legs. And I called my mother, really feeling apologetic that night, saying, "Mom, there was a demonstration. I could have been arrested, but I left beforehand." I thought she would be disappointed in me. And in fact, what she said was, "Tanana Reeve, I'm so glad you didn't get arrested. I went to jail so you wouldn't have to." And since that time, I've really had to sort of examine where I think my place can be. And as a writer in particular, working with my mother, both of us researching this book together, I've learned that there are many, many ways that we can create an ongoing civil rights movement, even though we don't have the marches today and the Jim Crow signs.
My guests are Tanana Reeve Du and her mother, Patricia Stevens Du. Their new memoir is called Freedom in the Family. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guests are Patricia Stevens Du, a longtime civil rights activist, and her daughter, Tanana Reeve Du, a journalist and novelist. They've written a new memoir comparing notes on the civil rights movement called Freedom in the Family. Tananarive, if your two sisters married white men, your husband is African American, but his first wife was white, so your stepchild is half white. I'm wondering if having interracial children in the family is making you rethink what the meaning of race is?
I think the next generation, it will be interesting to see how they grapple with this concept of race. You have talk about kids who want to call themselves multiracial, for example. And, you know, in some cases, it's because they want to honor both sets of parents. And I think in many cases, because our society is still so racist, that there's an eagerness to distance yourself from that label, which has been so painful and which has been used as a brand so much in the past. And I am curious to see how the next generation will grapple with that. But it hasn't shifted my feelings or thoughts about race because, as my mother mentioned, her mother was very fair. My father's mother was very fair. We have always included all colors of the rainbow within that group that is called black.
Since the time of slavery and segregation, as you look at different communities, you see all colors in the black race, totally rainbow colors. So we've always had these colors, but now it's by choice. It's by choice, but it's not making me think differently about race.
Well, I've got one last question for you both, and I'm not sure you'll be able to answer this, but if you could each describe one thing you learned about the other through the process of writing this book together. Tananarive, you want to start it off? Anything you learned about your mother through writing this book together?
I was quite shocked to learn that my mother was actually a normal kid for a time of her life.
as opposed to what?
Because, well, you know, I think I had the idea that she and her sister went to college with the notion that they were going to become civil rights activists and help change the world. And it's really only in the research of this book and in talking to her and in reading more about it that I discovered that my mother and sister, like a lot of these kids in these colleges, really went just to get their education. The civil rights movement landed on them. And it was both created by, but also just landing on top of them. So the first 2 years my mother was in school, she went to Roy Hamilton concerts and James Brown concerts, and she practiced her trumpet. And she did all the normal things any college student does. And then as a junior, it all changed very abruptly when she was arrested and was part of that jail. And so I was actually very surprised to realize that there is an alternate universe in which my mother would not have been that same activist.
Patricia Stevens-Dew, anything you learned about your daughter from writing this book together?
Well, the thing that I learned about her and the thing that she helped me the most with was to learn how to relax. And our personalities are very different. I'm always serious, too serious many times. But writing this book with Tananarive, she showed me we could relax a bit and still do the book. And in fact, if she had not shown me that, I don't know if we would have been able to finish this book because it was really very stressful. So she gave me a gift. She took my hand and said, "Let's relax. Let's go to a movie. Let's find that dude ranch. You're always talking about those horses of years past. Let's just relax a bit. And then we'll go into our work." So, I learned to compromise. I didn't mind if she came a little late. I didn't mind if she didn't want to work 23 and a half hours a day. I said, okay, we can work 18 hours a day. So I learned to compromise.
Tananarive, I see what you were up against when you were growing up.
Boy, oh boy. And really, it's funny when you go back to the stories from the movement, you know, the people would sneak around her because she was directing the project and there were very strict rules. And everyone thought my mother was bossy. So she's quite a handful, but she's a very strong and courageous woman. And I am so blessed to have had her as my mother.
Well, it's great to speak with you both. I thank you both for talking with us.
And thank you.
Tananarive Dew and Patricia Stevens-Dew are the authors of the new memoir, Freedom in the Family.